A lot of things when it comes to Nigerian food and consistency is an issue. And that's because there are no culinary schools that you can go and learn Nigerian cuisine.
What is the investment opportunity?
With us?
Yeah.
Chef Tolu Eros has built a culinary brand that spans continents. He's an Emmy Award-winning entrepreneur.
And the Los Angeles area Emmy goes to Rebel's Kitchen.
Scaling African culture one plate at a time.
Nigerian cuisine hasn't evolved fast enough over time because people are afraid to touch it. Why? Because they were always condemned every time they tried to play with it. They'd be like, this is not Amala. This is not how they do it. That's one step. The next step is...
But before the fame, he was just a boy learning how to cook from his mother and dreaming bigger than the kitchen.
My grandmother used to own a restaurant before I was born, as a matter of fact. And then when my grandmother passed on, my mother wanted to take on the baton. She started working on this restaurant and she needed me to help her with the business plan. So I came back really to help her set up a restaurant. And then I just became a part of the restaurant, invested everything that I had into that as well. And Omo, it was not easy. I went through the school of hard knocks. Like literally, life knocked me sideways. And my mother would say that failure is a huge part of success. It's not about how you fall, but how you rise. And so just pick yourself up and do it all over again.
Wait, so through the school of hard knocks you went through, what was one that made you almost take you out? Like, I don't know.
This episode is about more than food. It's about the business of heritage and why culture is the most powerful currency we have.
You have achieved something many African chefs dream of. How do you stay connected to the boy who sold cheese balls with his mother?
I want to first open up the conversation that when someone clicks into this video, right, to watch you, they may be on the way to work, maybe they're winding down for the day, they're working out. What is the one thing you want them to take away about building a food empire?
The one thing I want them to take away is that originality, authenticity, and passion is key. Whilst you have all those three things, it's very important for you to have your business hat on. The numbers are very important. If you can't do the numbers yourself, hire somebody to do it. I believe in outsourcing a lot of our services, a lot of your services. I think it's a lot better than even having it in-house fully, because for the quality of service that a lot of food businesses require, what you would need to pay somebody to be just yours is very high for a startup, right? But for somebody who is starting a business, I would always say start small. Don't start with 20 items on your menu. Find out one, two, three things that is uniquely yours that you do very well and calculate your cost down to the T. My grandmother would always say, if you do not do it with love, do not do it at all. So make sure it's something that you absolutely love doing. Otherwise, you're just going to be working every day of your life.
You're starting us off strong.
Already.
Okay, so actually I want to go deeper into something you just said. Well, there's a lot of things you said, but because I find with restaurants in general, but specifically from the context of on the continent, there is this challenge of I go to a restaurant, I see amala, then I see fried rice, then I see salmon. It's all over the place. So can you talk about that? Because I believe you started off with something and then you kind of expanded over time.
I think the industry is going through a process at the moment, and that process requires everyone to sort of try and figure out who they are in the industry. I think people who have become, like, let's use like in Italy, pasta kings, right? At some point, everybody was doing a mix of pasta, pizza, this and that, right? But the pasta king emerged after years of doing all of those different things and realizing, you know what? I'm actually really good at this pasta and other things are a distraction, right? However, because of the fact that our cuisine is so varied in terms of like, we have rice dishes, we have beans and porridges, we have swallows, we have soups and stews, you know, you always feel this need to try and satisfy everybody. It's really a big mistake. I think that a lot of restaurants here struggle, and this also includes my restaurant before I came back and said, all right, it's time to put this on pause, clean this mess all the way up, and then come back strong. It's because you get distracted with customers who are constantly asking for, oh, I want this, oh, I want that, oh, I want that. And yes, whilst you can't do all of them, can you actually do all of them at the same time and not have any one of them suffer? The answer is really and truly no. I think that it's very important for restaurants to gradually to start to find what they are really good at and focus on that and be known for that. And you can have a queue out the door. We know a restaurant in Victoria Island that is known for just its amala. We're not going to name names right now, but you know who we're talking about. That restaurant really and truly should just be focused on amala and maybe the grills of the suya spot. And the truth of the matter is the door will always be full. And then you can now start to expand, like what we did with Cookie Jar. If you remember Cookie Jar back in the day, the reason why Cookie Jar was so successful was because we focused on cookies. That does not mean that you are not going to be able to be creative within cookies. I started doing cookies, then went into cookie pops, cup cookies, and then cookie cakes. So even amala can be fufu, the dark one. And then you can start to even add things like pumpkin seeds into your amala and start to make your place like you need to be, you know, it's, I think it's a lot better if people are known for something.
So I want to even take it all the way back, right? And I find this quite interesting that you left university, right? Just months before graduation to follow your culinary passion. But a lot of people thought you were crazy.
Yes.
Did you think you were crazy?
And I thought I was absolutely crazy. Because the truth of the matter is, I didn't say it as, oh, I'm going to follow my passion. My grandmother used to own a restaurant before I was born, as a matter of fact. And then when she passed on, my mother wanted to throughout when I was a kid, my mother was always going on about how she wanted to own a restaurant herself, right? And then when my grandmother passed on, my mother wanted to take on the baton, right? And so she started working on this restaurant and she needed me to help her with the business plan. I was studying international business management at the time. So to help her with the business plan, I'd also gotten a lot of experience working in other restaurants abroad at the time. So I came back really to help her set up a restaurant. And then I just became a part of the restaurant, invested everything that I had into that as well. And before I knew it, my mother was just like, well, you're the one that said you want to go and do the restaurants in Ikoyi. Me, I'm all the way in Ikorodu. I'm not trying to do this journey. So happy birthday, it's yours. And at that time, I was already so far into it that there was no other option for me. This is all I wanted to do. I'd gotten all the information, education I could get out of university. I was already done. All I needed to do was hand in my dissertation and get my degree, right? And as things were unfolding, my dad was very sick at the time as well. He passed on a few months after that. So it was just a time where it was just like, look, you have to be on your feet. You have to stand up and you have to run. And I'm so glad that I just listened to that voice inside of me that was like, just take the risk and go with it. And it was not easy. I went through the school of hard knocks. Like literally, life knocked me sideways. And my mother would say that failure is a huge part of success. It's not about how you fall, but how you rise. And so just pick yourself up and do it all over again. She would always say, fail again better.
Wait, so through the school of hard knocks you went through, what was one that made you almost take you out?
Man, I think it was really dealing with the staff at the time. It was really dealing with the staff and all the, you know, pilfering that was going on. I was 21, right? So there was a lot of this like older, younger guy situation where, you know, it's as though people weren't taking me seriously enough. So I had to really like go crazy. Like literally, like that's when the whole shouting spin of my life started. It took me time to cleanse myself of all of that behavior of shouting to get things done. And I just realized that it was counterproductive at some points because it was going in one ear and just coming out the other.
Is there the part about the shouting part? A lot of people who sometimes come back, whether it's diaspora or whoever, that's one of the first challenges of, I'm used to just saying polite or being polite, but this shouting part, how did you navigate the PTSD after, you know, Japada, you could just talk to somebody and, you know, maybe they do it or they
so
don't.
So I did get in trouble a few times because in America. Because you were used to shouting. Because I was used to raising my voice. Yes. And you know, LA is a very litigious.
Yeah. They can't wait.
So I'd seen one or two signs like this. They don't tell you twice. I say, calm yourself down.
You gotta use your inner voice.
You have to use your inner voice. And it didn't take me long, really, because I'm personally not a fighter. You know, I rather, like, my people know, or my friends know, that I treat everyone like they're like my friends, you know. So people that work with me are like my friends. We go out, we hang out, they stay over if you need something, you know. It's like we're all human beings as long as we treat ourselves with respect. That's what is very important. And so it was easy for me to sort of find a way to use my inner voice and communicate. But now, going back and forth between America and Nigeria, I have to strike that balance, because the inner voice, if it's too inner in this Nigeria, nothing for you. They're not yet jack. So you still have to raise that voice small.
It needs to be balanced. So we've talked about the passing of your grandma and also your dad. What did that period do for you, and what impact did they have in your life? I want this to be an opportunity to remember them.
I think first thing, it taught me about love and loss. Right? Those two people loved me dearly. And I think I was fortunate enough to have preparation, because with both of them, I knew it was coming. It wasn't like out the blue. Right? And so I was mentally prepared for when it would eventually happen. I guess even to the point with my dad in particular, I was praying for it to happen sooner rather than later, because I just couldn't bear to see him like that anymore. You know, but I think ultimately it just taught me to be prepared for when it's time to move on. Over my career, I have launched 15, 16 brands, and I'm very quick to know when it's time to move on, baby. You know, one of them, nobody till today believes that I put it to sleep. Breakfast at Eros.
Yeah.
Bae, Omo.
I remember.
That Bae. Amazing brand, fantastic concept, way ahead of its time, especially with logistics in Nigeria. The logistics was killing me. Like, food would be ready. Who is picking up the food and where is it going? And then the guy that's going to go and deliver it is half the time not knowing, because I think Google Maps are also not very like functional at the time. So it's like the guy doesn't know where he's going. The customer is calling. And once breakfast people are angry people. People that are waiting for breakfast in the morning. Once somebody shouted at me once, twice like this, I said, because of 2000 Naira, please, pack it up, sleep. Let's go back to business, you know? So I think that just taught me, you know, how to move on from things and know when it's time to, you know, say goodbye.
Yeah.
So no matter how much I love something, I know when it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah. So we're big on culture here, right? We're able to export our African music, movies, and we keep talking about, when is this renaissance coming for African food and even African, like just African food in general, right? And I think you are definitely, if not one of the most premier pioneers of that globally. What role do you think that restaurants play in terms of cultural infrastructure globally?
I want to know if people taste their food. I think that's a very straight point answer to that, right? It's like the food, you go to a country, the first way to know or understand who these people are, you want to taste, you know, their food, right? And so restaurants actually play a very, very strong role in educating the world about the culture. Now, a lot of restaurants do not actually pay enough attention to that, because a lot of restaurants are focused on ambiance and finance only, as opposed to what impacts that they actually, you know, what impact or role that they are playing in the whole ecosystem, right? Whilst, yes, people do want a nice place to go and sit down and dine, but I think a lot of restaurants, especially indigenous restaurants, have to start to think truly about how exactly their restaurants are impacting the growth of that cultural economy. Because look at Nigeria right now. I would say, I think we all know that the arts and culture is about to become the biggest industry mm-hmm. in Nigeria mm-hmm. very soon, far exceeding oil,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that is because of the fact that it's such a vast industry. Agriculture is a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. And we have not even, we've not even started to scratch the surface yeah. of the wealth of our culture from an agricultural standpoint. Let alone, let's go into these things, mm-hmm. right? The coral beads or the cowries, right? I'm putting value on them, mm-hmm. you know, and really trying to now improve on the sourcing, the manufacturing, the processing, the packaging, the exportation of them, right? And restaurants are what? Are exporting agriculture.
Yeah.
But they're doing more than just exporting agriculture. To a certain extent, they are exporting design. Mm. You know, the clay pots, the chairs, mm. you know, the tables, the colors of the space. And then take it even further and see them actually exporting fashion mm. through the wares of their waiters mm. and their management team. Do you understand? And then now go even further. Can you go to a restaurant that there's no music? Mm-hmm. So they are also exporting music.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I find that restaurants are really at the epicenter of culture.
Mm. But what do you think is blocking us, or what do you think are the steps to fully export? And what I'm saying, like, I want to get to the point where, you know, in the US, in the UK, anywhere really, and within a 3-mile radius, I know there's a Nigerian restaurant, because Chinese, Thailand, India, they've all gone to that level. And I feel like with Nigeria, it's still like we have to look and search for that.
What's stopping us is the industry just started. Mm-hmm. The Nigerian culinary industry only really kicked off maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very, very, very young industry. Mm-hmm. Very young. Before myself and Chef Fregs, there are barely any chefs in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You would have cooks mm-hmm. who are working under Lebanese chefs,
mm-hmm.
but there were none. We had a few pastry chefs, the likes of Roberts, Dr. Roberts, Cakes by Tosa, you know, there are a few of them, right? But from a culinary standpoint, Chef Tia, myself, and Chef Fregs really kicked off this industry, mm. right? And then from that, it reduced the threat to entrance, because people want somebody who is going to show them that it's possible.
Mm.
Look at me moving to America.
Yeah.
I did that 4 years ago. And I put Nigerian cuisine and West African cuisine on the table only.
Mm.
Now look at how many restaurants have opened after that.
Yeah.
Because before that, it seems like such a huge risk.
Yeah.
I'm a risk taker. Bottom line is, it is a blessing and a curse in itself, because I'm constantly like my new restaurant that's opening in a couple of weeks in VI. It's a huge risk. Mm. It's never been a restaurant like that in the whole world.
Mm.
Who am I to say that it will be successful? Mm-hmm. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking that risk. But then what's going to happen out of that is, out of this restaurant, it's going to come out a few other concepts that mirror that, mm-hmm. which is what I love.
Mm-hmm.
I love to see that happen. Because even in the confectionery industry, when we joined the industry, I could count how many bakers and pastry chefs were known.
Mm.
There may have been one or two aunties who were baking for family and friends, but they were not publicly known as, this is my work and I am proud of it.
Mm.
Right? When Cookie Jar came out, right, and we started like going through using social media as a tool, we started using social media as a tool, working with celebrities, mm. doing events and things like that, it showed people that if you wanted to start a bakery, you don't need to wait until you have money to rent a space, buy a big oven, have all this expensive equipment. You can start it from your kitchen.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what we did.
Mm-hmm.
We started Cookie Jar out of our apartment kitchen in 1004. And gradually started to improve on it as time was going. As we get a big order, we'll say, ah, you pay us in advance. So why are you paying us in advance? So that we can collect your money and go and buy a big oven. I got a Tinsel 1000 order, and it was the money that was paid in advance that all of the money went into buying the oven to supply that order. But then I now had this oven, which has now gone forward to helping me produce constantly to grow the business. And from then on, the business is growing. People are seeing that, and it is acting as a source of inspiration. The same way me being in America has become a source of inspiration to others to think, okay, we can export the culture. I'm not saying leave Nigeria and go do that. What I'm saying is it is possible for our culture to shine and be on the same table or on the same street as any other cuisine. But it takes time. It really does take time. And that time has started, and you're going to see it move very, very quickly. I mean, now we have Michelin-starred Nigerian restaurants. So,
but can you actually, I want to go deeper into this, right? So what does it look like to export in the sense of like, how should our food be presented, right? And I'm bringing this up because I know Chef Frex talked a little bit about how, like, you know, if it's just soup and eba, that's, you know, maybe people from abroad might not understand, oh, how do I start? How do I eat it? Right? Is there a presentation?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So the evolution of the industry itself goes from the sourcing of the ingredients, which even go, which takes, if you take it a little backward, it's now investing in our farmers, giving them direction on what we want them to grow. Right. And constantly supporting them by purchasing from them and using those ingredients. Right. So now we have quality ingredients. Then there is now the logistics and storage of those quality ingredients. Right. And then there is now the processing of those ingredients. Now, there are two ways you can process the ingredients. You can process them authentically, meaning exactly the way they are done back in the day. Right. But, and then there is now the modernist approach, which is still taking those ingredients, but then sort of flipping them on their heads, like the way you would see like an Elegbede will do, where you would find he's done banga, but it looks like sweet, for example, it still tastes like banga. Right. So that's the modernist approach. Right. Whereas with someone like me, whilst I can do the modernist approach, I did that and I called myself back because I realized that that's not my calling. What I am here to do is not necessarily to show you that Nigerian food I'm not trying to clean it up too much. Like I'm trying to clean it up, but not to the point where it becomes sterile. Right? I'm cleaning it up to the point where it is clean enough for it to be accepted by everyone. And that is taking the authentic ingredient, maybe a little bit of processing here and there, but more so preparing it with less oil, less pepper, you know, balancing all of those things out and then presenting it in a way that is fashionable, so to speak. Right? So hence why a lot of my menus have become more family style than plated, because I find that with plated, I'm tempted to do so many different elements and break them down and bring them back together and try and make them look so pretty that the average person just feels like this is not relatable, right? As opposed to what I do with family style, where it looks like a nice big plate, you know, but everything is beautifully presented. And that both parts are important. You know, we need the extremists to really push the cuisine to its, you know, extreme, right? And then we need the purists to like keep the authenticity of it, but just clean it up a little bit and make it more presentable. So yes, very much important for presentation to be taking very, very seriously. And I see that happening, right? That's everyone's doing that now. Everyone is taking presentation a lot more seriously. But the truth of the matter is that Nigerian cuisine hasn't evolved fast enough over time. It's been kept the same way, you know, because people were afraid to touch it. Why? Why are people afraid? Because they were always condemned every time they tried to play with it. You know, they were condemned. They'd be like, ah, this is not amala. This is not how they do it, you know? But now, because it's trendy, you know, and then we have all these Gen Zs that their parents listen to them, not the other way around. Now everyone's paying attention and people don't mind trying out things in, you know, slightly more, you know, or rather better presented. And they find themselves also now actually preferring it this way, you know, because like, for example, my mother, if she sees anything that's not well presented, she's like, I don't understand. Who is this lady here?
Yeah. 4 years ago, you moved to Yankee. We actually, I don't know if you remember the Miami boat party.
What's today's date?
This is 2025.
Is May, June
12th? Oh, June. I said June 12th.
Exactly today, 4 years ago.
Are you serious?
Really? I just realized that sitting right here. Exactly today, 4 years ago.
Wow.
That's amazing. Powerful.
But can you walk us through the decision that led to you leaving for America? What were some of the macros and conditions that you were in that you said, oh, more, it might be time to take my talents?
I did not actually decide to move to America. America opened its arms to me and it was time. But as I always learned over time, success is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to be successful. And so I'm always preparing for when the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
COVID was a huge part of that because COVID allowed me to prepare in a way that I would never have been able to if I didn't have that downtime. During COVID, I set up a business called Fresh Prep by Eros. I don't know if anybody remembers that. It was, it still is, but at the time I thought it was a public facing company.
Yeah.
It was after I had started moving to America that I realized that that business was actually created for my internal business. Right. And what Fresh Prep by Eros was is basically a prep company that, basically speeds up the process of, cooking, you know, rather than having to go to 3 or 4 different supermarkets to purchase all the things you need to make a dish. You can get everything from Fresh Prep already done, where garlic is blended into a paste. Onions has been blended into a paste. You know, I have spices already pre-mixed for chicken, for fish, you know, for steak. I have oils already made. I have my jollof rice made, jollof sauce made. It's a sauce already. So they've roasted the tomatoes, blended it, cooked it down, added all the spices, the oil, and then they vacuum sealed it. So everything was vacuum sealed and being kept in fridges and freezers. And at the time, I was planning on selling them to consumers, which we did during COVID. We'll sell them as kits, right? But then what happened was when the travel ban was lifted, and like, you know, now Nigeria, after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months like this, your mental state of mind will start to shiver. You will say, okay, we do need a step out.
For perspective.
For perspective, so we can see clearly. Because very soon, start to move mad.
It's like that movie, Sinners. He invites you in. You need to step out.
So that was what was doing me at that time. I needed to just like, I was saying, you know, and this time I said, you know what? I need like a full on like 3 months. All right. How am I going to afford 3 months, Tolu? We just come out of a pandemic. It's not like we have like unlimited funds and whatever. So as I always would do, my strategy for any travel is to do a dinner. One or two dinners. I paid for my tickets and paid for my accommodation. That's pretty much it, right? So I was like, all right, do the usual thing. Get a space when I get to, my cousin lives in LA. So it's always that's always my go-to space, go-to place. Plus I love.
Okay. So that's how you ended up in LA.
That's how I ended up in LA. So every time, that's where I have family that I can go and can be there for 3 months and nobody's going to be like, I'm not going to be getting on anybody's nerves. Nobody's going to get on my nerves. Like we're like brothers, like, you know? So I'm like, all right, I'm pulling up. I'm going to America. I'm going to be there for 3 months. I'll do New York. I'll do LA for 1 month. I'll do New York for maybe 2 weeks, then do Houston. You know, I have some family. We have a family house in Houston. Do a few weeks there. Between the three of them, Sha, I'll do a dinner each. So now I have to make sure that when I get to each of these places, I'm not running helter-skelter trying to find most things. So fresh prep came in handy. My jollof rice sauces were prepped, vacuum sealed and frozen. My spices blended, mixed together, vacuum sealed. Everything that I needed, all vacuum sealed. So anywhere I go, all I needed to do were the things that you're not allowed to travel with, which is usually vegetables, meats, things like that. So when I get to there, all I need to do is find somewhere where I can buy it. I started looking online. I found Instacart. I said, oh, Lord, you have done it for me. So for me, from before I even left Nigeria, I'd already loaded my cart in those three different places of the things that I wanted. So all I needed to do was check out. So I packed my load, though. Three suitcases, one with clothes, one with plates, because I know that I have to use some local elements. So I carried calabash, dugong, you know, things that would bring my local elements together. And then one with all my vacuum sealed things with freezer, ice packs, all of that. And I headed straight for LA. I got there, obviously did my first 2 weeks of just holiday. And so once I get there, load everything into the freezers, keep everything nice and cold. Vacuum seal can last almost a year or 2 years, but 3 months is about how much I needed. So just put it in the freezer. So immediately got there, went back to the freezer, put everything in there. And then now started looking for where the venue would be. Found a venue, you know, the help of like people like Amplify Africa helped me to get some people together, did my first event, sold it out. People are like, ah, only one. Let's do another one now. Did another one, sold it out again. Relay Gallery calls me like, I have space, so to come out, I want to do something for my collectors, this, that. Would you like to do a dinner? Oh, yeah, now. Did another one. So I said, let me test myself one last time. So I went. My friend has a, what do you call it? One of his apartment buildings that has, you know,
like community.
So I went there, did it. One person, actually, this actually happened after I'd gone. So I did three dinners. Yeah. And then I now left to New York. Went to New York to go and do one dinner. I ended up doing two dinners, right? And then now came back to LA, and then Relay's like, we'd like to do a dinner. So I did another dinner. Then went to Houston, did dinner, did like two dinners. Then Miami came in the mix. Somebody wants to do an event. Went to Miami, did another one. Atlanta, somebody say, oh, one of course, I hear you're in America. I have this event. So Black Caucus. So I want you to come and do 100 people. Ah, I say 100 people. Went there, did that, you know. On my way back, get a call from Oxygen Bank. They want me to come and do an event for their big event. They're giving me sponsors. They'll give me all the money to do everything. Big events, 50 people, whatever it is. Anyway, I had a huge budget. So I said, let me shoot them with it. Went, got a big venue. Walls were changing because I wanted to transport people to Sahara Desert.
I think I remember seeing this was in New York, right? Yes, I remember.
It's that event that scattered everything.
Yeah.
That event was September 12th as well. So dates are always very, very particular.
Yeah.
So it was exactly 3 months. Let's use this as a wrap up last event. I've been able to break even on my travels, on my tour. I have small change, maybe like 5K, you know, just nothing too crazy, but at least something to say, thanks for coming, you know? Oh, yeah, now start doing this event. Do you know that I went way over budget on that event? I now decided to now go and do after party to try and recoup money worst. I now went deeper and deeper. I think I was in like 20K debt after that event. My mother said, you keep your debt, stay in that America. I'll find that debt money, collect that money back, because there's no way you're coming back here. It's not Naira. And at that time, between that time, the Naira had flipped from what was maybe like 300 or something, 60.
Yeah.
It went to
1,000.
The thing was just doing wow. So I went back to LA with my teeth in between my leg.
We're gonna make it.
Ha! I still have to find a way. From one event to the other, people were asking, let's do an event. And I'm just like, look, like all the other events I was doing, there are holiday events, there are friends and family. But once it starts to become like work related, like I'm going to need this to be legal.
Yeah.
I'm not, I don't play those games. Yeah, I don't do illegal businesses or anything like that. So my friends are like, okay, maybe we should find a see if there's a visa you can get to maybe work temporarily or something in America or whatever. So I'm like, all right, cool. Let's look into it. My friend now says, oh, she has a lawyer and the lawyer can, look at my case and see what visa might be available. That's how the lawyer called me, asked me to send them my profile, did all of that. And they said, oh, have you heard of O-1 visa?
God is good.
I said, what's that? They said, aliens of extraordinary ability. I said, huh?
That's me.
Huh? I said, wait, there's a visa called aliens of extraordinary ability. They said, yes. So they think you are a candidate. I say, if I am a candidate and they make me alien of extraordinary ability, it's over for everybody. You are trying to tell me that I can do and undo. And so I went on my knees and I said, Lord, God, if this is your will, let it be done and show me signs and wonders. You know, if this is actually your will, show me signs and wonders. And the way things happened for that whole visa process was incredible. You know, things happen so quickly. Like, for example, one of the main steps was to get approval from the Culinary Federation. I had 6 months from when I landed in America, which was June 12th, to December 12th to leave America before I break your standard, because I went on a visiting visa. My lawyer is like, as long as we submit before December 12th, then you are fine because they will give you a 3-month extension for your processing of the visa. Now, 1st of December, I'm in Miami for Art Basel. And my lawyer's like, all right, let's submit this thing and let's pray that they come back within 2 weeks. Because if they don't come back within 2 weeks, you might have to go back to Nigeria and continue the process. Or at least go back and then come back. But my visa has already expired. So going back means I have to apply. And then at that time, the waiting time was 2 years. Appointment at embassy. Said, Lord, well, if this is your will, then do you know that we put in the visa on the 1st of December at 8:00 in the morning? I got a call at 12 noon on that same day. My lawyer said, we've never, ever seen this in the years of us applying for any visa. But your Culinary Federation approval has come in. Approved. I said, okay. So should we go ahead and submit? I said, of course. Surprise. What are we waiting for? So we went and submitted. And a week later, we got a response. And my lawyer calls and says, this is not what we obviously want. We want to hear. We'd like you to just say approved. But they're asking for an RFE, which is not a problem. RFE is just a reference to show the list of what you're going to do over the next 3 years. A blessing in disguise.
Yeah, request for further evidence.
Just to show, So their lawyer is like, okay, give us an itinerary for the 3 years that you're going to be here. What and what are you planning to do?
Amazing.
But you have the whole of Christmas till January. It's holidays coming up. It's almost Christmas already. You know, take the time in January, submit. So I had the whole of December. The first time I've ever been away from Nigeria during Christmas, the whole dirty December.
At least it was in LA.
Yeah, exactly. So, and my cousin too had traveled. So I had the house to myself and I literally wrote down a list of my itinerary. Little did I know that was a wish list. I listed everything, including Coachella. Grammys dinner, Super Bowl dinners, all of the things that we have eventually gone ahead to do.
So it's like a manifestation list.
It was a manifestation list. You know, and so that's how put the list together. January submitted it. 5 days later, was approved, and immediately went ahead and got the space in Hollywood that you guys have been to.
You know what's so interesting? It's amazing to hear this backstory because we live some of those moments with you, right? And I think the part that blows my mind, because some people who are listening to this from an immigration perspective and thinking through from that lens, the RFE, like some of us have been through the same sort of things, right? But you know, sometimes people ask you, what's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? Doing that RFE or the request for further evidence, basically now you manifested. Did it basically help you be like, look, there's a plan for me to actually go out to execute?
Absolutely. It was now like my business plan.
It's crazy.
It literally was now my business plan. And I think that also now goes further to now advise, say the reason why you create a business plan. And my lawyer kept saying that the embassy knows that you are, or rather the immigration office knows that you are not God.
Yeah.
Not everything you are going to write down is definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
But they want to just see that you have some sort of plan,
right, yeah,
and you are going to actually try to execute some of it.
Mm.
Right? So even in business, you write a plan, but not every single thing is going to actually happen the way you plan it to happen.
Yeah.
But having that plan gives you some level of direction. Mm. It also allows you to know whether you are on the right path or not.
Mm.
And also to be able to give yourself on the tap, a tap on the back so that you can be able to say, yes, I wrote down this as a plan and I have gone ahead to achieve it.
Yeah.
Because the same way, like now I'm like, thank God I had written down Coachella, because it wouldn't have meant that much to me if I hadn't wished for it.
Yeah.
It would have just been like something that just happened.
Yeah.
Mm. But because it was happening, because I knew how much I had wished for it. And I also another things, me, I'm a prayerful guy. Mm. As I wrote that thing, I turned that thing into prayer points.
Mm.
I sent it to my mother. I said, these are my prayer points. Put it to my mother. I said, put it under your bed.
Wait, tell us about Coachella. How, like, what Coachella happened? Yeah, how did it?
My goodness, it was such an incredible experience. And you know, we've done it twice now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first one, which was obviously like mind-blowing for us. You know, it came out of an event. We had done an event for a group called Desert X.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were just blown away by our presentation of African cuisine. And you know me now, like I the food would look good, but it will taste like what it's supposed to taste like, very balanced, you know. And I'm all about, you know, my textures, I'm all about my flavors, and I'm also all about the presentation too. And then I go ahead to tell a story, which now ties it all together, you know. So right after I did that Desert X event, we got an email saying that the guys who select people for Coachella dinners want to come and check us out. At our dining room, that we're available for a private dinner on like a Wednesday. We normally typically do Thursday, Friday. So I just said, of course,
we're going to be available.
So we made ourselves available and I did my thing. And like in 2 or 3 days, we got an email saying that we've been selected to be one of the chefs at that year's Coachella, which was 2023, because I moved in 2022. So 2023, which is exactly a year after. And so that it's going to be at the Rose Garden. The Rose Garden has a capacity of 250 guests. Typically, they get about 196 to 200. So we should plan for about that number because they don't want us to have any waste.
Mm.
So about 196 to 200 is usually the number of tickets sold. Mm. But the Rose Garden has a capacity of 250. I had hired a PR team at the time as well. So obviously, my PR team went out with the news. They also went out with the news. In 1 week, my dinner had sold 250 seats and had a waiting list of over 100.
Crazy.
At the night of the dinner, we had to extend. You would see videos of us adding chairs. It looked like Owambe at one point. This my manager said, only Nigerians. Well, we have set the table already. Eros is like, well, I mean, I had people like Don Jazzy, Ogomozi, all these people who were outside, like, we need to find how we're going to sit them.
Yeah.
Do you understand? We had to extend the table to 325 and then still do a cocktail reception on the outside for other people who could not necessarily come and sit down.
Yeah.
And then watch me walk that whole field. Typically, food is just served. But because me, I like to present, I ran that field every course to go in groups to tell people a story for every single course. I created a menu called Chasing Drums.
Mm-hmm.
And every dish on the menu was representing a drum from different parts of Nigeria and some regions in West Africa. So I came into even the Coachella field with my speakers playing like drums. Fellas, you know, all of that, you know, even when I came in rolling with my guys, were rolling in carts of jollof rice. I was with my speaker. It was energy, man. And even just the whole pull up, like convoying with my friend Sam Adigoke, Lola Benson, my assistants. Yeah, we had like three cars in, you know. It was such a cool like trip, you know. I rented a G-Wagon from LA to Palm Springs. Like, it was just so cool, right? We arrived, we only had two VIP two all access artist pass, and then the rest were VIP. The way we arrived like this, they gave all of us artist pass. By the time we arrived like this, they themselves were gingered because we got there. That was the time was I'm unavailable. So we pulled up to the car park, opened the doors of the car, played the song. Myself, her, Wonke, Bamishedu was there too. We're there doing unbelievable. They know this because we're waiting for the cars to come and give us the band. But then they came, they too saw us vibing, and they were like, and then they gave us the band. I was like, ah, no, this is not, you know, Ninja sense now. No, this is not what it's. So why? I said, oh, so I'm a friend, everybody confused them, waiting them, everybody knows everybody. I said, yeah, bye. Oh my God, it was such an amazing trip, you know, the whole time, you know, and I was so proud of everything. The food was fantastic. You know, we got amazing feedback, you know, and 2 years later, which is last year, we got to go back again. But this time around for a private event for Tyler. And we did I just even hired a South African chef in the restaurant in the dining room in LA. So it so happened that, you know, I had somebody who could help me work on creating a South and Western African menu. Wow. So we're able to do that with Pandora, fantastic event as well. But I was here, so I was working remotely with them. And it's just I'm just so proud of my team as a whole to be able to now be back and forth and be here in Lagos while things are still happening in Los Angeles, you know?
Let's talk about the LA restaurant, right? I remember when it first got opened and like, you know, people, because I don't know if you know this because I've been a Cali boy for so long. And I know my LA people watching this are going to agree, even if it's secret, but LA has not always had the best Nigerian food.
Correct.
So we're suffering before you came. But what was that process like? What were some of the challenges, especially for people who are thinking about going into this sort of business? What are some of the challenges of specifically opening up a restaurant business in LA? How did you navigate it? And what was the story behind that?
Okay, so I started off with the private dining room, which allowed me a soft landing to sort of build a network of the team, you know, so staff and stuff. And then also purveyors, you know, finding that. And then we got the opportunity to do the 6 months test of concept at the Citizens Public Market, which for me, I wanted to test the idea of a fast casual Nigerian restaurant. So if you remember Ile Bistro in Culver City, again, another very successful venture. I guess my biggest challenge will probably still fall down to finding the right people, you know, that for me, and the funding, funding, because I'm self-funded. Right. Hopefully, if anybody's listening, we are looking for money.
There's VCs people that watch this.
Please, we are ready. I think I was mentioning before we got on thing that I just started a hospitality company with a partner. We're opening a new restaurant in Victoria Island. We start testing out soft opening tomorrow, and then we will be opening the main restaurant, which is Nigeria's first fufu and swallow bar, sort of omakase style. Concept dining, right? And that's our first project here. I want to roll this out into different states. Different parts of the country. So probably Abuja. And then we want to go into like other parts of Africa and even the Middle East. So we're focused on Africa and the Middle East for our strategy for this brand, Nevada. So we're looking for money. Bring the money. Very much self-funded whilst in America. And as you can imagine, that Culver City project set me all the way back, you know, whilst it was successful in its day-to-day, but I'd invested so much in setting it up, you know, and you had just have all these charges and bills and things that just come up from, you think you are paying, you see the thing, or it would say $350 a month. Oh, that's not bad. You do it. When it's time for installation, they will now find out that there's an installation fee. And then that 350 does not include X, Y, and Z. So if you really want the full service, you need to do X, Y, and Z. What you also don't know is that that is a rental. So now, when I closed the restaurant, that's when the real bills hit. Because now all these things that I thought were, I now have to pay, because the term of the thing is 3 years. I've only used it for 6 months. So now a lot of these companies are like, so it definitely had its effects, you know, but it was a learning curve. I'm very happy that I did it. You know, I learned from that process, and you never know, you might be seeing a little bistro in Lagos soon, because now I know exactly what to do to give you that. It's fast casual. It's like quick bistro. They're like, it's very quick. Think Chipotle.
Yeah, I was about to say Chipotle. Yeah,
think Chipotle, but Nigerian food. So very easy. Now that I've said it, now I'm just like, maybe I should just actually do that too. But I'm also not trying to spread myself too thin, because we have the new Ile Eros restaurant opening in Lekki, which is a 2.0 version of what we had, authentic Nigerian with modern influences. And then we have Apartment 90 opening in Victoria Island in the old Federal Palace building, which is part of Now House Art Collective. There's about six different sectors of the space. So we have the gallery, we have the fashion studio, we have the design studio, we have a residency, we have a store, and then we also have, we have a dark room, we have a bar. A dark room is like a quiet room where you can sort of like just be speak easy, you know. And then we have the gastronomy, which has three sectors. We have Small Chops, which is like our bar snacks. Suya, which is kind of like elevated take on suya. Keeping the suya itself standard, but all the condiments that come around it. So tomatoes are turned into tomato jam. Onions is pickled onions. You know, masa is a crumble. Things like that, just to really like elevate the experience of having suya. And then we have Apartment 90, which is the main gastronomy. It's think omakase, but Nigerian. So you guys are really getting the tea, because this is the first place that we're actually, or at least publicly, talking about Apartment 90, which I'm super, super proud of to be doing with my partner, Richard.
Wow.
I have a personal question. All the questions are personal. But sometimes I wonder, you know, in the US, you have Panda Express. It, even though it might not be authentically Chinese, but it's been a way in which some people have been introduced to Asian food. Now, in places like Nigeria, you might have the place Black Bell, like those sort of like Panda Express sort of models. What do you think about the efficacy of those type of restaurant models or food models in the US, especially for the diaspora, especially because the diaspora seems to have a need for these sort of like,
I think they're food, very important. They just need to, with Nigerian food especially, they need to understand the smell, how to manage that smell, right? So my approach would be to have a glass wall where you're seeing it, but you're not necessarily smelling it. You can point at what you want or use technology where you can see everything on display. The guys are able to serve it, but you click on the board and say, I want pounded yam, amala, and assorted meat. And it combines your plate and somebody serves it and you pick it up. But then ambiance wise, we need to go there. See this? Somebody should take this as a like a concept wall and create a space and do. There are places like that in Houston. Right. But then again, there's not enough, like, there isn't any much enough attention to detail on the ambience. You know, it's very, very mom and pop style as opposed to taking it seriously. And I think a lot of it has to do with funding. A lot of it really and truly has to do with funding. So, I mean, I'm personally ready for whoever has the funding to execute these things. And I have a long list of people who can help manage and, you know, keep the standards up to high power. I will come in more so as a consultant to design the space, you know, to design the back of houses in the kitchen, the operational flow, the menu itself. Because a lot of things when it comes to Nigerian food and consistency is an issue. And that's because, first of all, remember that there isn't any, at least just now, maybe there is a few, but there are no culinary schools that you can go and learn the Nigerian cuisine. And what culinary schools teach you more than cooking is prepping. Because mise en place and prep is the key to a successful kitchen. Mm. That's how you maintain your standards and your consistency. Yeah. So that your soup is not tasting different every single day. And it is fresh at all the time.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. It's all in the prep.
Yeah.
Do you understand? And so for me, one of the things that my kitchen is very good at, and that's why I've been away for 4 years and Ile Eros has still been respected as one of the best, if not the best, Nigerian restaurant.
Yeah.
It's because we've been able to manage that. Of course, people will make mistakes here and there.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, especially dealing with this Nigeria, somebody has, like today, one of the girls came in crying. Mm. And why was that? Because the bus she entered into, I guess the conductor or whatever was on a different P, she pushed her out of the bus, her phone fell down and cracked. So you can imagine that her state of mind as soon as she arrives is already messed up.
Mm.
So someone like her, the first thing I had to do was to tell her to go take a break. You know, I feel like another thing, Nigeria, this is something that I'm going to do. I'm saying it now and I'm speaking it into existence, and I hope my mother is going to watch this and hear. We need to hire a therapist for your company.
Yeah. Mm.
There's somebody that needs to be there just managing their mental state of mind because people are going through it.
Yes.
I had somebody resign 2 days ago, and when the resignation came to me as a surprise, but not really, because I could see him sort of like falling back. Last week, he had mentioned that he spends about 12,000 naira every day coming to work. This guy earns just under 300,000 naira a month. Do the maths. 12 times 10, 120, times three. That's 360. He spends more money. Okay, so maybe not every day he's coming to work, but he's spending more money on transport than he is earning as a salary.
Yeah.
So where does that person even want to start? So half of them, like, so now I'm just like, okay, first of all, maybe we can't even carry on with this salary structure that we have, you know? And my mom is like, but we have to. I said, well, fortunately, like, something has to give. And this is why it's important that you start to look at the cost of your services. Because if I'm going to provide high-end services and hire somebody like him, I need to be able to pay somebody like him.
Well,
do you understand? And then also maybe now start to look at incentivizing him by giving him maybe, because he works in the events department, a commission on every event done. So that way, he's looking for more events. I'm making more. He's making more. Everyone's happy. But really and truly, the bottom line, what I'm saying is that the mental state of mind of a lot of people when they come to work is already warped. And so getting things out of them sometimes is really tough. You know, and it's easy to say, oh, when you come to the office, forget your problems outside. China, how now?
I'm just very like,
is it compassionate is the word towards, you know, when people mess up, I'm just like, the other day, one of my chefs was saying that they messed something up. And my reaction was like, okay, so, let's do this and this to solve it. And when I left, everyone was looking like,
you didn't
this guy don't change. Oh, say this or girl before. If I don't shout, scatter everywhere. And I was just like, well, that doesn't really solve any problems. Because first of all, before that problem happened, my instincts had told me, if you don't put I down very well, somebody will mess this thing up. But I said, I moved on to something that I forgot. Then when it happened, I was already prepared. I was just like, all right, here's the solution. Let's put it on. Let's move on.
I want to triple click into this thing you just said, right? Because what I say to Chika sometimes, because Chika, she can be shouting sometimes. So I would say to her that what I've come to realize about Nigeria, especially with managing people, is if you know that you're the person that has sense, it's your duty to let that sense stretch all the way that it can. So you have to have the emotional intelligence to say, okay, if I know that this person has a limitation, I will most likely make this mistake. It's not for them to make the mistake and you know, start shouting. It's to say, I'm anticipating there's going to be a mistake here. How can I set you up for success, right? Can you advise my co-host here on how to navigate this country? Because sometimes she's
we actually have to go into that as well.
Yeah, fashion. Please. But can you help advise her on how you navigate the land?
You have to be calming down.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that? Well, I think first of all, it's just going out of this conversation knowing fully well that people are going through it.
Yeah.
Mm.
They're dealing with it a lot, you know. And a lot of these people also do not have the exposure that you have. So when you're saying things that sound normal to you, it sounds foreign to some people, right? One of the things that my sister would say is that if the person could do something else, the person wouldn't be doing this. Do you understand? You know, like your driver, for example, if he had the opportunity, he would probably be prefer to work in an office than to be driving around. But he's where he is because of conditions. Say condition I make the crayfish bend. So as the crayfish don't bend, don't expect that crayfish to straight. Just work with the bend, right? And just, I think it is a lot of times it's just being mentally prepared for the BS. When you're mentally prepared for the BS, you start to laugh when they do the thing, you know? You just start to laugh. Like, there's so many things now that happen that before the thing happened already, I'm already laughing now. Just watch. Just watch. It's about to, just watch. And then all we do is just laugh about it and then we move on quickly.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the shouting is not really, really solving any problem. It's I get it sometimes. You just want to vent. You know, like yesterday, my driver did something that really, really pissed me off. I had an appointment and one of the things I hate is being late. And an appointment, and I told him to quickly go and do something and come back. Then he went to go and do two other things I did not send him to do. And then by the time the guy came, I'm running late. I'm just like, I think we all need that pressure ball.
It
will sell out,
you know. So sometimes, yes, you have to, you would definitely want to lash out and vent,
yeah,
you know. But if you really want to get things done, then. The end of the day, man, it's your blood pressure that you're just rising.
Actually, speaking on this consistency thing, right? And I'm not going to go into the company's name. But essentially, we were looking for a chef, right? And what we realized was we worked with a company and the food was not consistent.
Of course.
The afan, the beans.
Man, don't get me started.
Which other soup did we have?
You would like it today. You'd be like, oh my God, so mad. Yeah. Can we have it again? Then you get to the second day, you're like,
what?
Like, it would be so far apart that you just be like.
Also, even to double click into what she's saying, because I have a theory and I said to her, I feel like as Naira and the economy said to crash, the taste buds of the land said to change, even for the chefs. So, like, there was a time when we were going to restaurants and most of everything now just had pepper. Like, there's no seasoning. It's just pepper in. I'm talking about like proper pepper, not like just pepper black that
will
pepper.
Just like cloud.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yes,
so
yes.
I'm like, yo, is there something, is there corner? Obviously, I'm pretty sure it's tied, but I used to assume that when I used to cook food or when I cook, I'll taste my own food and I'll know if it's banging or not. Are the chefs not tasting the food? Like what's
leading to this lack of consistency? Do the chefs care? I think that's the first thing, right? Again, they're going through their own stuff. So they're honest, like, let me just do this thing, collect my money and be going home. I don't care if you don't come back tomorrow. But for today, a lot of them are living for today, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, are they exposed? So last week, for example, we're having some issues and my culinary director was like, you know what? He's actually going to take some of the chefs out to other restaurants just to experience other things so that they too start to feel like they're comparing their palates with something else. Because then when you get so used to eating your own thing over and over again, you can almost cannot tell, you know, what is good and what isn't. Now, when it comes down to that whole consistency thing, it could be one of two things. One is that the person is being too creative. You know, they want to overimpress you. So sometimes they're adding things that they're not supposed to add and all of that. Second thing is, again, the preparation, but lack of documentation, right? One of the things that I do is, when I create something and I really like it, I have to make sure that I document it, right? So even if I did not document it at the first time, and most times when I go into making something the first time and I know this is something that I'm going to have to make again, I'm documenting as I am making, right? That allows me to have some parameters, because whilst you think you might remember everything, I bet you anything in 2 days, you come back there and try and make it, you'll be asking yourself whether you use black pepper or white pepper. And then you find yourself either using both, or using the wrong one or the other. Do you understand? So it's that documentation that's really, really key. And I know chefs say, oh, you cook from your heart. Yes, I get that. We cook from our heart, but still document some shit. Sorry, mind my French. But document this. Document it. Even if you're not going to cook with it, have that as a guide. It's at least going to serve as a ratio. It's when the ratios are so completely off that you now find people using pepper to try and distract you from whether the food is good or not.
I want us to talk about the Chase Sapphire campaign, right? Can you walk us through first, what did it feel like just being in that moment? I think, to be honest, in my own experience, it was the first time I had seen African cuisine on such a large, like, commercial platform in that way. It was done with, like, folks like Michael B. Jordan and some other celebrities as well. Can you walk us through how that came about and how did it also feel for you?
How did it come about? I just got a call one day, Stanley, Lumax, works with Chase, and I guess they're working on a project. And he had done his due diligence, right? And this wasn't like one of the things where he's trying to help a brother out. Like, we didn't really have a relationship or anything. Yeah. It was more so they had come up with a concept that they wanted to do something with the continent, I guess. And maybe with cuisine, definitely with cuisine, right? It was experiences, right? So the whole Sapphire card is a card that you use to,
it's a travel
access,
card.
Exactly. Access different experiences wherever you travel to, you know? So you use it to get into the lounge, you use it to, access Super Bowl or concerts, chefs, you know? I guess doing the research in terms of who could execute the storytelling part of things, you know, I guess my name came up on the list, did the due diligence, and I guess everything checked out. And when I got the call to find out whether or not I was tied with any other financial institutions, obviously not. And if I'd be interested, the answer is yes. And then I put my team, you know, on it. And then they started the conversations. When I found out that it was Michael that was part of it, Michael B. Jordan, I was obviously super excited because I've been a huge fan of his work for the longest time, you know. And then we now got to meet in person and myself and him hit it off pretty much immediately. And so the whole experience of the commercial was very organic in the sense that, like, we weren't acting. What you saw was what was actually happening, you know? And I think even the directors would have said that that was one of the easiest commercials to shoot just because of how natural everything was.
Yeah.
Myself and Michael B. Jordan already knew ourselves, so we had built a rapport. And then the whole set was designed in a way that made me feel very comfortable because it looked like my dining room, you know? And it was just... It's also something that I love. The camera loves me. I love the camera.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of this and talking about financial institutions, because you talked about funding, right? And a lot of people who watch this podcast are investors. They have VC funds, even equity funds. What is the investment opportunity?
With us?
Yeah. And just even in general in this industry.
I mean, the investment opportunity is vast. You know, there is a lot of room for investing in gastronomy, whether it's restaurants, you know, whether it's fast casual. Yeah. Delivery businesses are not really being, people are sleeping on that because in Nigeria, a lot, how many times do you eat out as opposed to eat in? Do you understand? So that's a huge business that, I mean, I know how much right now the restaurant is not open for people to walk in, but we are still doing as much business as we would do normally because now we're focused on just our deliveries alone.
Wait, Hilarious,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah. Deliveries. Yeah, deliveries is full on. You know, cloud kitchens. Chefs need kitchens to work out of. Do you understand? So there are enough cloud kitchens. And if I really want to get into it, you know me, I studied international business management.
Yes,
so
please.
I'm actually a businessman, right? The industry needs to backwardly integrate. Mm. We need to go back to the farmers and start to work on educating our farmers on how to process their ingredients. Mm. Do you know that Nigeria loses more than 60% of its tomatoes? We waste that much. Like it goes to actual
storage issues.
Yeah. But even whilst we have the storage issues, why are we not canning our tomatoes? Mm. Why are we not turning them to tomato puree and not even paste, because paste requires dehydration and all of that. Just the basic, like blend the tomatoes and can it. Mm. Jar it. Mm. But it's a simple, it's actually a really simple process you can teach somebody in one day. Mm. So in my head, it's like we can set up a tutorial where we go to different villages, different towns and teach farmers how to convert some of their products into, you know, packaged goods that can last a longer time on the shelf life. Mm. That's one step. The next step is logistics. Mm. Who is investing in trailers and storage? I mean, air conditioned, like temperature conditioned trucks that is moving produce from farm to market.
Yeah.
And then storage facilities. Mm. I'm saying all this one now, I should go and be doing this thing.
No, but it requires investment. And
so these are things that I'm very happy to jump on, you know, with the right partners, you know, because we need this. You know, we do need this. And then packaging also.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people can make a lot of things, but then we don't have labs that can test them properly. And we don't have, you know, the right, people don't know where the labs are. And maybe the labs are there, but we don't know where the labs are.
Yeah.
And who is going to help us package our spices, package our sauces, package our drinks. Mm. Do you understand? Everyone is making their own zobo and packaging themselves, but really and truly, you should be able to white label this at some point. Do you understand? So those are just to name some of the, you know,